The January 14th Democratic debates taught viewers something about the candidates and a lot about the corporate press. So many lowlights, it's hard to choose. For many, it would be after having heard Bernie Sanders say he did not tell Elizabeth Warren that a woman could never be president. Moderator Abby Phillip asked Warren how she felt when Sanders said the thing he said he didn't say. Then there was Wolf Blitzer's awkwardly transparent attempt at guilt by association. Quote, Senator Sanders, Iran's Ayatollah Khamenei has again called for all U.S. troops to be pulled out of the Middle East, something you've called for as well, close quote. The groan heard round the world might have been when Sanders was cut off from talking about environmental opposition to Trump's new NAFTA treaty by a moderator saying, quote, we're going to get to climate change, but I'd like to stay on trade, close quote. If media can't understand the way climate disruption and trade, despite being different beats, are critically integrated, why would we expect coherent or even intelligible reporting from them? Moderators seemed at times to be performing the role of adversarial reporters without being clear on what that job actually is. It's about drawing out what powerful people might want concealed, not forcing them to answer again the same questions in the same form they've been asked multiple times, as Sanders was repeatedly called to account for the trillions of dollars Medicare for All would cost U.S. taxpayers, which, absent the savings, is the quintessential half a ball score. And commentators couldn't help but note that none of the many questions about keeping U.S. troops in the Middle East suggested that cost had anything to do with that. As Rolling Stone noted in their roundup, quote, in an era of endless war abroad, painfully and often prohibitively expensive health care and education at home, and a climate crisis that threatens to make the planet inhospitable to its 7 billion human inhabitants, the challenges of change were treated as paramount or even insurmountable, while the costs of maintaining the status quo were barely mentioned, close quote. One of the things not discussed in the debate, along with Puerto Rico, abortion rights, and immigration, was labor and the rights of working people to fair wages and workplace protection. But that's not because debate hosts CNN don't have a position. They do. The network has just settled an agreement to pay $76 million in back pay it took from broadcast technicians 15 years ago. The largest monetary settlement in the history of the National Labor Relations Board, it stems from when CNN terminated a contract with Team Video Services that provided audio and video services to their New York and Washington bureaus, and then hired new, non-union workers to do those jobs. That's called union busting, and it's pretty much labor law violation 101. But after a judge called the violation in 2008, CNN fought long and hard, filing more than 1,000 exceptions. In 2014, the NLRB ordered CNN to bargain with the unions and provide back pay, but CNN appealed again, before finally settling in advance of a planned picket at the Democratic debates, by which point several of the workers due back pay had died. CNN is a company that has a position on workers organizing. They will spend years in court to fight and deny it. CNN reporters are employees of that company and ultimately no more likely than any other employees to come out swinging against the position of the people who sign their checks. And finally, it took a court ruling to make clear that it's not a crime to feed homeless people, but stalking and harassing them? That'll get you a paycheck at some outlets. Infamously, the New York Post, which, as Josmar Trujillo writes for Fair.org, closed out 2019 with a master class in homeless shaming. Gothamist gave an appropriately acerbic account of the news the Post thought its readers could use, a drooling and pungent homeless man using a Whole Foods buffet. Gothamist notes, quote, We are told that the bar has no sampling signs, that the man has visibly dirty mitts and is grabbing food from the trays and shoving it directly into his mouth, wet with drool and framed by a scraggly beard. The man's beard is worth two mentions. Close quote. The New York Post spent 2 weeks in 2016 crusading against a homeless woman who had the audacity to push around multiple carts of her possessions. They ran multiple front-page stories in 2015 about a homeless man that the paper claimed was making $200 an hour by begging. On New Year's Day, the Post had an outraged story about a shanty town in Manhattan where homeless people still lingered even after the paper themselves had called law enforcement to remove them. Well, the Post is a cartoon to many, but their actions shape coverage of other papers. After the tabloid chased around a homeless man waiting for him to pee and putting that on their front cover twice a few years ago, the New York Times followed suit with its own in-depth pee story, citing the Post's front pagers. The Times did quote a source noting that Wall Street analysts doing jello shots on Madison Avenue might be as prone to public urination as a crew of robbers drinking malt liquor in East New York. But the story wound up endorsing the contention that the latter rather than the former deserved attention because they're the ones relaxing after a long day of robbing. Well, the Times complained that arrests for public urination are not concentrated enough in poorer neighborhoods, or as they put it, neighborhoods historically subjected to the highest numbers of recorded police stops. There was, of course, no mention in the story of any relationship between public urination and poverty or homelessness. The New York Post saw some pushback after their Whole Foods story, with some people calling out the reporters. It required the skills of three of them, apparently, to bring us that important piece. And that pushback rankled folks like BuzzFeed's news director and its editor-in-chief, who both weighed in to chastise people for shaming the shamers. New York Post editor Joe Tacopino was also affronted. Critics could unleash an angry mob, he said, against reporters who were simply doing their jobs. It's true that publishers, editors, and owners are ultimately most responsible for anti-homeless media coverage. But is there no blame left for journalists willing to cut their teeth by punching down? It seems as though when they win awards, they show up to collect the accolades their stories provoke. What about when those stories provoke outrage? It's not clear why reporters, any more than ICE officers, should be able to use just following orders to excuse work that bullies and endangers the most vulnerable. You're listening to Counterspin, brought to you each week by the Media Watch Group Fair.